If you read just one headline about the future of work this year, I'm willing to bet it mentioned Sam Altman's prediction of sky-high salaries after AI.
Oh, absolutely. That phrase just has this immediate, powerful appeal, doesn't it?
It really does. It sounds like a future where everyone wins, where all this new productivity just leads straight to, you know, immense personal wealth for everybody.
And that's why it exploded. It speaks to this really deep, sort of natural desire for technology to actually benefit the individual. But as we see in the sources, if you stopped reading right there at the headline,
if you just took the promise without the context,
you missed the entire point. I mean, Altman's message is incredibly optimistic, but it is absolutely conditional, and it frankly requires courage.
Exactly. And that's our mission in this deep dive. We're here to unpack that sharp condition that's attached to the promise. The key word is after. We're digging into the source material to really understand the scale of this disruptive shift that has to happen before we get to that prosperity.
Yeah.
It's why the next decade is, you know, both the most exciting time to start a career and maybe one of the most disruptive for people already in one.
You just can't get to the utopian after without navigating what you call the messy middle.
It's the whole story. The reward isn't automatic. It's earned by surviving that transition. Okay, so let's get into it. Part one. The core warning. The price of prosperity. Because the timeline here is everything. Altman is basically saying, look, disruption comes first, then new types of work emerge.
You have to endure the transition to get the reward. And this isn't, you know, just some theoretical forecast. He leads OpenAI. He's literally building the systems that are doing the automating.
So when he warns about the job market, we have to take it seriously.
We have to treat it as an active forecast. And he's pretty explicit about the kinds of roles that are just going to disappear.
So what specifically is on the chopping block?
A lot of those traditional early career roles, especially the ones that exist mostly to, you know, gather and synthesize information.
Okay, so like entry-level analysts.
Entry-level analysts, junior roles that are all about routine data entry, standard reporting, any kind of highly repetitive knowledge work. Basically, if a task involves structured input that leads to a structured output, AI is taking it.
That is a profoundly difficult idea, because those are the very jobs that teach new graduates how to be professionals.
Yes.
Those first jobs are where you learn the company structure, the unwritten rules, how to operate in a business.
Precisely. We're talking about jobs that are basically the training wheels of the professional world. And,
yeah,
you know, the sources point out this kind of dark humor in it all, that future graduates might look back and almost feel sorry for us.
Because we had to do all that boring old work.
Exactly. But as the source material points out, that boring old work.
That boring work pays the rent.
It pays the rent right now. It's one thing to joke about automating spreadsheets and summary reports, but it's another thing when you realize those tasks support millions of households. They're the entry point to huge industries like finance or consulting.
And what makes us different from, say, the Industrial Revolution is the speed, right?
It's the speed factor completely. I mean, the economy has always destroyed and created jobs with technology. That's normal. That's healthy churn. But historical changes, you know, like electricity or the early internet, they took decades to really spread through the workplace.
Sure.
AI tools are spreading exponentially faster. So that timeline for workers and companies to adapt is being compressed from decades into just a few years.
And that speed, that rapid compression, that creates what we could call the Gen Z paradox.
Yeah.
Altman actually says he's envious of the generation starting their careers now.
He does, because they get to grow up alongside this massive transformation.
It sounds great.
It sounds uplifting, yeah, but it comes with this immediate danger. When AI removes the training wheels, all that routine, low-risk work, it means companies have to urgently build brand new, sophisticated training paths.
Or the workers themselves have to figure out how to leapfrog straight to strategic thinking instead of learning through repetition.
Exactly. If you can't get paid to do the basic stuff that teaches you how the business works, you need a totally different strategy.
So we know the floor is dropping out of the market and fast, which brings up the terrifying question.
Huh.
Where is the premium value actually going to be? And that takes us right into part two, the logic trap and the new timeline.
Let's start with the timeline. Altman suggests a student graduating around, say, 2035 might be entering a completely different job market.
So the mid-2030s.
The mid-2030s is when he thinks those new high-paying jobs could become, you know, abundant.
And these are just slightly better jobs. We're talking high-value roles in totally new fields. The source material mentions things like frontier areas in space exploration or advanced biotech.
New energy infrastructure, yeah.
Yeah.
Industries that need human contribution that's so specialized, it commands a huge premium.
That's the dream.
Yeah.
But this is where we have to tackle that logic trap. This is, I think, the biggest misconception we need to clear up for you, the listener.
It really is. People hear AI and they just automatically think their productivity boost will guarantee higher salaries.
Well, wait a second. If AI makes everyone 10 times more productive, shouldn't that raise all boats? What's the economic mechanism that stops that from happening?
It's just basic supply and demand. Salaries only rise when the demand for a skill is higher than the supply of that skill.
Okay.
Think about it like this. Maybe 20 years ago, knowing how to use Google search was a superpower.
Right.
It gave you a massive edge.
For sure.
But now everyone uses Google search. It's a commodity. It's just the expected floor.
So if everyone is using the same AI tool to write an email or summarize a report or generate some code,
yep.
Then basic AI usage just becomes the new minimum entry requirement. It's the floor, not the ceiling.
Exactly. If the tool is easy to use and everyone has it, that skill becomes normal, not rare. And if something is normal, it doesn't get you a premium paycheck. The idea that you can just learn a few clever prompts and suddenly double your salary, that's all hype. The market is just mercilessly efficient at commoditizing skills that are easy to get.
Okay, so if being productive with AI is just the new baseline, we have to focus on the skills that are, I guess, inherently resistant to being commoditized. What are they? What are the three types of skills that the sources say will stay scarce and valuable?
Right. So these are the skills of synthesis, strategy, and judgment. The three that will prevent you from falling into that basic AI usage trap are, first, deep problem framing.
Deep problem framing.
Yeah. It's not about finding the answer. It's about defining the problem accurately in the first place. If an AI gives you a perfect answer to the wrong question, you've just wasted a lot of time and money.
Can you give me a concrete example of that?
Sure. Think about a business slump. A basic AI prompt might give you three tactical marketing campaigns. Deep problem framing is the human judgment to step back and say, hold on, our core problem isn't marketing. It's that our product market fit has expired because of new regulations.
Ah, I see. That's a strategic pivot. That's asking a nonlinear question that the AI can't.
It can't because it requires that kind of cross-domain human experience.
Fascinating. Okay, so that's one. What's the second scarce skill?
System design. And this isn't about IT architecture. This is about designing the workflows, the governance rules, the accountability structures for how large groups of people interact with these powerful new AI tools.
So things like who vets the AI's output, who decides which inputs are okay to use, and crucially, who pays the price when the AI gets it catastrophically wrong.
Absolutely. That all requires human design governance. The system designer is the person who makes sure the AI's efficiency doesn't create some massive, unmanageable risk. That is highly specialized work. And finally, number three is domain leadership.
So being the ultimate expert in your field.
Yes, but with an AI twist. It means you're the definitive expert in a specific vertical finance, healthcare compliance, supply chain logistics. And you understand how AI reshapes that entire workflow while still respecting all the regulatory boundaries and the human elements.
So that formula, domain plus AI.
That's the power formula. It beats the AI-only generalist every single time.
That's the premium differentiator.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like if your job is just performing routine tasks, you're at risk.
Yeah.
But if you shift your focus to designing how the work gets done, that's where the value is.
You have to focus on applying the tool to a specific complex context, not just mastering the tool itself.
This is a perfect transition into part three, practical strategy for the messy middle. We've laid out the thread and the prize. For you, the listener, trying to figure out your next move right now, what are the four actionable steps that fit this disruption first view?
Okay, these are the survival moves. The sources give four very specific strategies for navigating this and for building that domain plus AI equation.
Let's hear them.
First is AI usage. And this sounds obvious, but I mean deep usage for daily work and production, not just playing around with fun prompts.
Right.
You need to integrate these tools so profoundly they become an extension of your professional thinking.
So it's the difference between asking ChatGPT a question once in a while versus building a custom GPT to automate 50% of your regulatory filings.
Precisely. You need to treat this like learning Excel back in 2005. Back then, if you didn't know Excel, you were limited. Now, Excel is a given. AI fluency is fast becoming that new foundation.
So if you don't have it, you're unemployable. If you do, you just meet the minimum bar.
You just meet the bar, yeah.
Okay, that sets the baseline. What's next?
Domain expertise. You absolutely have to pick a specific, complex domain. We mentioned finance, marketing ops, compliance, healthcare, complex supply chains.
Right.
The key is to find a niche where the regulatory complexity, the deep industry history, and the high stakes prevent full automation right away.
Because if the AI makes a mistake in one of those fields, the human domain expert is the only one who can spot it and prevent, say, a $1 million fine.
Exactly. The domain knowledge is the quality control. You need to be a supply chain expert who uses AI to design global logistics, not just an AI prompt engineer who doesn't understand customs regulations.
And the third strategy is about proving that this combination actually works.
That's proof of work. In the old economy, you got rewarded for effort, for seniority, for hours at your desk. The new market is ruthless. It only rewards measurable results. You have to shift your focus from tasks you completed to outcomes you delivered.
What does that look like in practice?
It means building tangible evidence, case studies, measurable automation wins, documented results. So instead of putting proficient in AI tools on your resume,
right,
you need to be able to say, used generative AI to automate 70% of the initial data scrubbing for Q3, which reduced our prep time by 80 hours. The market rewards results, not vibes.
Not perceived effort, yeah. Okay, and the final piece, which seems to hold its value no matter what, is judgment.
Judgment and decision making. It's critical because AI is inherently fallible. Yeah. It's not accountable. When the AI is wrong, when it hallucinates data or misinterprets something, a human still owns the legal, the financial, and the reputational consequences.
Mm.
So that skill of ethical decision-making, of assessing risk in weird, unstructured scenarios, and maintaining trust, that remains a purely human premium.
It all comes back to that slightly funny but very pointed warning in the sources. Don't be the person who calls themselves an AI expert but then has to ask the AI how to attach a PDF.
Exactly. Genuine, measurable application of skills to high-stakes problems. That's everything. You're setting yourself up to be a manager and a designer of AI systems, not just a performer of tasks.
Which takes us right into part four.
Yeah.
The workplace reorganization. Because this isn't just about your individual strategy. It's about how companies themselves are going to change. And soon, maybe as early as 2026.
They have to. Companies can't afford to have expensive human labor doing tasks that cost pennies to automate. So the whole organizational structure is going to shift, and it'll probably split work into three distinct layers.
Okay, describe those three layers for us.
So at the bottom layer, you'll have the AI. It's handling all the routine, repeatable stuff, the sheer volume of information processing.
The grunt work.
Then in the middle, you have the humans, and their job is to handle the exceptions, to manage customer trust in critical moments, and to make those final high-stakes decisions where all the liability rests.
And the top layer.
That's the leaders and the systems designers. Their job isn't execution, it's governance. They design the workflows, they set the rules, they build the validation checkpoints, and they make sure the accountability structure is strong enough to prevent those expensive AI mistakes we talked about.
That completely changes what success looks like. What does that do to performance reviews and hiring?
Employers are shifting their focus very, very quickly. They will hire and reward people who can manage systems, not just perform tasks. The sources are clear. Output matters way more than hours worked.
Right.
The value proposition becomes simple. If you can use AI to deliver 100 units of quality output in 10 hours, you are vastly more valuable than someone who delivers 50 units manually in 40 hours. Efficiency is the new loyalty.
That is a massive mental shift for traditional companies that value desk time and effort.
Yeah.
And this is where it's really interesting, connecting back to Altman himself. He doesn't even exclude the very top of the pyramid from this.
He's on the record saying he fully expects AI could eventually replace him as CEO, and he hopes OpenAI will be one of the first companies to actually do it.
Wow.
It just underlines the point that no role from the entry-level analyst all the way to the executive suite is fundamentally immune from having its tasks re-architected. The only question is whether you are the human doing the re-architecting or the one being re-architected out.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener? We started with this really appealing headline, sky-high salaries, and we've established that this promise is contingent. The market has to first go through a massive, rapid job disruption.
Forcing equally rapid adaptation among workers. Altman's message is ultimately optimistic, but it requires courage. It requires intentionality and a real focus on developing those scarce skills.
The necessary shift is moving from being a performer of tasks to a designer and a manager of these sophisticated systems.
It's less about trying to work harder or faster than the AI, which is a losing game.
Yeah.
It's much more about focusing your unique human intelligence on defining the complex problems that AI should be solving.
And then designing the safety net for when it inevitably messes up.
Exactly. And that leaves us with a final provocative thought that really builds on everything we've talked about today. If the boring old entry-level jobs, the jobs that have always paid the rent and taught people how work actually works, if they're suddenly gone, that creates a huge societal problem before we ever get to the mid-2030s prosperity. So the question becomes structural. What new societal infrastructure or mandatory training program or fundamental safety net will we need to build urgently to make sure everyone can actually afford to wait for the after economy? That immediate challenge is the biggest one looming in the messy middle.